everybody, and welcome to the Enterprise Sales Development Podcast, brought to you by Cyence Technologies. We interview outbound leaders at fast growth businesses to learn their secrets and bring you actionable insights. Thanks for joining us this week.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Enterprise Sales Development. I'm your host, Eric Quanstrom, the CMO at Cyence. Today's episode, we had Joel Stevenson, the CEO of Yesware, as our guest. And Joel has decades of sales experience. And for those of you who have been hiding under a rock for the last decade or so, you're definitely probably familiar with, you're familiar with Yesware, one of the early tools to come on the scene in the prospecting space. And frankly, they've developed quite a following. I believe they have tens of thousands of users. And Joel details some of his time and kind of like experience and even his own growth to the CEO role at Yesware. Fascinating conversation. We talk a lot about, you know, kind of like where sales development has come from, where it's going, and also where it's at right now, which he has some interesting observations around, ones you're definitely going to want to listen for, including his association of tragedy of the commons that we're at right now. So an interesting little teaser to pay attention for later in the interview. But I enjoyed this conversation, and I think you will too. So without further ado, let's get to it. Here's Joel Stevenson. And we're back with Joel Stevenson, the CEO of Yesware. And, you know, Joel, I think that your experience in the space is really interesting to me because, you know, Yesware was a very early tool as kind of sales development came of age, if you will. And I'd love to get your perspective because you weren't always a CEO of Yesware. In fact, not even when you started with the company. Mm-hmm. Give us a little a kind of a brief catch up, if you will, on first how you got to the company and, you know, how you rose through the ranks, so to speak, to become a CEO.
Yeah, well, the quick version of it is I started my career in sales a long time ago. Worked for a telecom company out of college, and then ended up working for one of my customers who was in software. This was, you know, back when we used to ship disks and Oracle servers and all that, you know, the real old school, you know, pre.com bubble type stuff. And I did that for a little while, and then ended up having a career transition as the economy got real soft after 9/11. I went back and did my MBA to try to do, you know, add a little bit more of a quantitative angle to my experiences in education. Then I did consulting for a little bit and went back to startup company, which eventually led me to this little company in Boston called csnstores.com, which eventually became this company called wayfair.com, which now a lot of people know of. And I was there for 7.5 years and did a bunch of different jobs. But the one that's probably more interesting to your audience is we built a sort of a little B2B business inside of the general Wayfair business, where we call that interior designers and contractors and builders. And, you know, I'd start sort of incubated that in a prior job and then went back to it when it was about 100 million. And in 2 years, we took it from 100 to about 400 million run rate. Now it's, you know, I think it's might be over 2 billion at this point. So it's got to be quite a big part of the overall Wayfair business, but Wayfair got a little bit too big. Thank you. Wayfair got a little bit too big for me. And so I started looking around for something different to do. And we happened to have an investor and a board member in common, this guy, Neeraj Agarwal from Battery Ventures. And so I got to know the Yesware team a little bit, and was an opportunity for me to go from sort of a buyer of tech, because we made very heavy investments in technology to drive sales productivity at Wayfair. And so a chance to go from sort of a buyer of that tech to a seller of that tech, I thought was pretty neat, and be able to stay in Boston, which was an important part of the calculus as well. And so I started, there was, you know, the old CEO and I had kind of worked out an arrangement where if we got a little bit of momentum and some additional funding into the company, that I would take over as CEO. And so I started not as CEO, but the plan was for me to be CEO. And that was sort of a closely guarded secret until the sort of the conditions were right. But that actually helped a lot, because he and I both knew that was the plan. And so we were able to run a very smooth transition, and it worked out great. There was no acrimony, and he ended up serving as the chairman of the board. And then he left to found a different company, which he has recently sold to American Express. So he did great in his own right, but we had a real, it was a very, very good transition.
How about that? A CEO in residence, if you will.
Yeah.
Hiding under the titles of SVP of sales marketing and COO at the time. That's great. So, you know, you started at Yesware back in 2017, if my facts are correct. Mm-hmm. And I think we could probably acknowledge that the SDR role, you know, back in the .com one days, wasn't even formally called that. Mm-hmm. You know, full cycle sales reps were more the rule than the exception. And as the SDR role kind of like came of age, so to speak, I really think of the mid, you know, kind of like 2000 or the teens, if you will, as being kind of like the formative years. Do you share that same sort of timeline and, you know, kind of view?
Yeah, I think that's, you sort of remember some, you know, it was like there was that book Predictable Revenue that came, like there were a lot of sort of hallmarks of that era. I mean, a lot of the tech companies like us started to come on the scene then. And I think you know, that was those were pretty good SaaS years in terms of funding and performance. And I think you had a lot of people blogging about this stuff. You had, you know, the Revenue Collective group. There were a lot of sort of people that were out there, I think, talking about kind of interesting things at that time. And you started to see, I think, the beginning of the, I don't know, you almost, you know, sales, I think traditionally was more of like a batch manufacturing process where it's like, you know, I got this, it's maybe just me, or I've got like a group of people that I pull in as needed, but we go from this thing to this thing to this thing. And then it became much more of an assembly line where, okay, well, the SDRs or the BDRs are on the front line sort of, you know, gathering the initial, you know, the initial interest, and they're passing it to the account executive and the account executive. So we sort of took it from, you know, batch processing to sort of, you know, continuous manufacturing type of process. And I think many of those things, as I remember it, happened in that time.
And it almost feels like second nature now, like we just kind of take for granted that that's the model in place for not just fast growth, you know, venture-backed startups, but I think the vast majority of B2B businesses that don't have transactional sales cycles associated with them.
Yeah, we've certainly seen that grow. And, you know, yes, where we have, you know, as you'd expect, many of our customers are tech companies, but we have a variety of customers in many different industries. And, you know, in Vendasta, the company that acquired Yesware, primarily sells through agency, and they've got big resellers like big radio stations and, you know, newspaper conglomerates and all sorts. And you definitely see this, you definitely see this type of specialist approach throughout all different industries now. Sometimes I almost wonder if we've taken it too far in some sense, but this has definitely been a powerful idea about how to organize sales.
Tell me more about, let's peel that onion for a second, because I might tend to agree with you about taking things too far from a sales specialization standpoint, but give me your perspective.
Yeah, it depends on the scenario a little bit, but I sometimes see this thing in sales organizations. You know, we're fortunate. We get to talk or meet with a lot of different folks. But you sometimes see this thing where it's almost like a fraternity. Like I remember, you know, we weren't big hazers in my fraternity, but it's like you think about your classic fraternity where it's like, you know, you come in and you have to do all this hazing. And then once you're through the hazing, then, you know, it's like, well, you don't have to participate in that. You might inflict that on other people. Well, you don't sort of have to go through that anymore. And I think with some account executives, you end up in this thing where it's like, well, look, like I went through the hazing and like, I'm obviously not doing outbound anymore. Like that's their job. And like, I'm like, don't expect me to pick up the phone and cold call somebody. Like everything needs to be served up to me on the silverest of silver platters. Or whatever. I'm going to walk somewhere else where they're going to like. So I think in some ways we ruined a whole cohort of account executives that way. And I think it's starting to come back a little bit now, where you're starting to, I think every, you know, especially as the, at least in the tech world where funding's gotten a little bit tighter, and I think everything in the economy's gotten a little bit tougher and people have laid off. I think everyone's now sort of found religion about, you know, no matter where you are in the sales process, you got to do some outbound and some hunting activities. But I think there was a period there where we just kind of lost our way a little.
Yeah. Now everyone prospects.
Yeah, that's right.
Even if you had been kind of like in that SDR, you know, 100% of the time prospecting type role prior.
Yeah, that's right.
Which I think is probably on balance, the fairest way to organize, you know, because it also helps with ratios when you really think about it. And I also think that there's probably a good case to be made around swim lanes and even light or maybe even heavy account-based marketing strategies kind of moving their way in to where AEs can take like the key accounts in their territory, geography, whatever their organization happens to determine is right for them.
Yeah. The other thing that I think is interesting for people to think about and experiment with is like the degree to which you you organize the specialties. And so in one approach, you basically have all the SDRs that report to an SDR manager, and they're kind of doing their own thing and they're teeing up leads and the account executives take them. But there's another way of doing that, which is more like the, I forget who coined this. It might've been one of the PTC guys, but it's more of this like airplane bomber, you know, where you've got the pilot and you've got the gunner and you've got the, you know, the navigator and all this stuff. And so you're sort of more organized around like these, sort of like full functionality teams where, you know, instead of the SDRs all reporting into one SDR manager, they might report into these individual groups. And it's part of the idea is that the group, you know, you sort of advance from one position to another position within the group, and then that gets backfilled. But you might have a particular specialty, like this might be like the group that knows biotech better than anybody else. And so you end up spending a little bit more time with that type of more of an industry focus versus more of the general, like, hey, we just sort of take all comers.
Almost like a pod model that could be wrapped around a buying, group or cohort of companies that would make, you know, logical sense for becoming more expert or understanding at a deeper level and therefore being better at outbound.
Right. And it changes some of the mentorship aspects as well. It's like you might work a lot more closely now with some of these more experienced people, where if you're an SDR just getting started, that might be really beneficial. Now, the trade-off is you probably get less very specific coaching. You maybe have, you know, less of a set of peer interactions. So there's no free lunch. There's positive and negatives to all of that. But I think a lot of times people often don't consider this other more of more blended approach.
Yeah. And I would imagine too, that you're probably rotating or adjusting depending on the sectors that you're working, because there's no infinite, you know, patch that gets work forever and ever.
Yeah, that's right.
So ultimately, I think that's interesting to think about from a model or a structural perspective for each company as they adjust their go-to-market, isn't it?
Yeah. And you might have, you know, and you might have verticals that just look a little bit differently. Like you might have somewhere, you know, maybe you're a very well-known commodity and you don't need that many SDRs because you've got as many leads as you can handle. And there's no obvious channel where you could go to get new leads economically. So maybe you're heavy on AEs or customer success there. And maybe there's some other new one that you're trying to penetrate, and maybe you go heavy on SDRs on that one, sort of within whatever your sales process can handle in terms of, you know, reasonable, you know, SDR to AE type ratios.
Now, you just mentioned something that I frankly haven't heard from a lot of different corners, and especially, peers that I talk to, or just the scuttlebutt in kind of like the space, especially the tech space, probably since Q1 of 2022. And that is companies with as many leads as they can handle. In fact, just the opposite seems to be the truism these days, is that everyone's CAC, everyone's cost of acquisition or customer acquisition cost is going up. You know, the lead flow, if you will, or volume seem to be going down. And that's been generally true over the last 5 quarters in tech. Have you seen similar?
Yep. Yeah, I think that's, there's obviously some, you know, you get every now and then you get an outlier case where somebody's doing something that just, you know, kind of meets the moment at the right time or gets super hot. But yeah, I think most of what I'm seeing these days is everybody's trying to, there's a lot of belt tightening going on, and everyone's trying to hustle. And, you know, it's, that in some ways makes it even more difficult, because when everybody's out there prospecting, everybody has tools like, you know, Yesware or many of the other, any of the other sort of tools that are out there. Now you've got AI that's adding even a, you know, sort of additional ability to do more at scale. The buying pool hasn't increased. There's the same number of people, right, you know, executives or whatever that are out there making software buying decisions. And so, you know, now you're competing in a, you know, even more people in this same type of market. And, you know, and eventually, you know, we sometimes, you know, think about this idea of like the tragedy of the commons, where it's like you eventually, like, if we annoy the shit out of the buyers so much that they invest very heavily in defense mechanisms, that's bad for everybody.
Yeah. You know? That's a really interesting way to put it, tragedy of the commons, because, you know, that parable, if you will, or well-known tale of overfishing, you know, especially in the North Atlantic, you know, where people hit the same patch and all of a sudden wonder why, you know, there's not the same robust amount of fish after everyone fishes in the same area, is an interesting way of looking at prospecting or the prospecting side of the house. I would even add to that, just to bring it current, you know, the other thing that I've noticed, and the stats seem to bear this out, but businesses that had a significant tranche in, you know, some venture-backed startups as their buyers, the venture pullback of funded companies or even new formation of companies and funding cycles, you know, it's what, a third of what it was even in 2021. And so those buyers, not only has the buying pool not increased, but it's shrunk in that regard.
Right. Right. And you're getting it not only on the acquisition side, but I think in many people are seeing it on the retention side as well, where, you know, you go through a belt tightening exercise and, you know, you don't necessarily want to let people go. And so you go through all the lists of software, like, and you start going through like, who bought this thing? Like, what the hell is this software? Like, does anybody know what this thing does?
Yeah.
You know, and they're like, all right, cut that. Oh, well, you know, like we actually, you know, Vendas is an interesting case of this. We actually we've moved off of Slack to Google Spaces and Google Chat, which was, you know, I'm going to say not a popular decision when it was made, but, you know, we made it to the other side, and it's like, okay, but you probably wouldn't have made that decision under normal circumstances. It's really more of like, hey, like, where are the easy wins? And this maybe, you know, you could argue whether this was an easy win or not, but it's like, that's one that you can take. And so now it's like, it just, everything's getting, you know, that cycle that was so good for a while, where, you know, companies were showing up with huge checks and they had to go spend it, and they maybe weren't that, you know, as diligent as they maybe needed to be about some stuff, like, that is completely flipped now.
Yeah. That, I agree with that perspective. We've done very similar things here at Science, where, you know, we've basically stack ranked the SaaS tools. And, you know, we may even be an extreme case, because we've started developing our own software where we used to use third-party tools going forward. And I think that rationalization, everyone's gotten the same religion all at the same time, which is kind of fascinating to observe as a tech vendor, you know, like, on the space.
Yeah, I that's right. And I think, you know, in some companies where it looked like they had, you know, very defensible positions for being system of record or whatever, and then it's all of a sudden you're like, oh shit, like, maybe I could just do this in Airtable, and like, I'd get 90% of the functionality, and, you know, it's a cost like me 5% of what I'm paying, you know, XYZ system of record vendor to do. It's a pretty interesting time from that perspective.
Well, and I think one of the other things, and this is a mini trend that I'm observing, tell me if you agree, especially in the sales development space, we seem to have reached probably like peak tech, where, you know, the mid-teens was a time of adoption just to outfit and just to get, you know, like, beyond basic tools into your tech stack to do prospecting at either a more efficient, a better, more effective level. And you could count everything from conversation intelligence to, you know, automating sendouts to personalization of, you know, kind of like messaging. Of course, all the dashboarding that comes along with any of this, channel by channel tools, you know, like, I'm thinking in the extreme case, like, parallel dialers that can make, you know, 10 calls at a time, yeah. as a good example of, you know, like just the machine guns of tech.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
In our space. And now, you know, we seem to be on that kind of like pendulum or mini trend switch away from point, like best of breed point solutions that can do something at a very extreme level to perhaps even more of a lot of these tools and suites all start to do a lot of the same things.
Mm-hmm.
Would you agree with that assessment here in 2023?
I mean, a lot of money has been raised in this space. I mean, a lot of money has been raised in this space. I mean, in many ways, you could argue, you know, our funding was like, you know, bringing a little bit of a knife to a gunfight. But and so that money's got to go somewhere, right? And it's like, and it's, you know, I think as you, you know, as software development costs in general now start to decline, where we don't have as much of a, you know, where there isn't the extreme shortage of engineers that we used to have, you've got productivity advantages in, you know, tools like, you know, GitHub Copilot and all this other stuff. And then you've got, you know, the continued rise of, you know, of open source tools that feel like everything's getting better in that sense. So, you know, I think for many companies, if you're trying to figure out the calculus of, you know, should we integrate to this thing or should we buy a thing or should we just build a thing that, you know, is adjacent that we think our customers are asking for, we see them using because we see them plugging this thing in. I think for a lot of companies, it's just easier to say, well, let's just build it. Mm-hmm. And then we're going to control the user experience and, you know, we'll do it the way that we want. And we, you know, I think everybody thinks that they, you know, they're in the better, you know, kind of strategic position to do that. And not everyone's going to win when the musical chairs game stops. But I think that that is a logical thing that, that people have done. And if you think about where, you know, the earlier conversation about the prospecting side of things, you know, there was a period where I think, you know, you couldn't do it like completely senselessly, but, you know, without tons of thought, volume, you know, within reason was, you know, just more volume was better. And so if you could figure all these things to automate and just drive more volume through your funnel, like in, for the most part, you were going to get better results. I think that's definitely not true now. And so if you were to think of maybe an extreme example where you're selling a big ticket item, maybe to a relatively small market, and you have to cut through the noise and be better than anybody else at convincing this one person that you're a real human and you've got real value to deliver, and that person should take some time out of their schedule to talk to you. Like, there's not a lot of tools that are going to help you get way better at that. You know, I would argue, I mean, I think, you know, if you're really toned in, it's like, it's really comes down to the old skills of, you know, doing your research and figuring out, you know, what you think the person's going to be interesting in and having good follow-up and just like, right, you know, crafting good content for that person, I think.
Yeah. I think that that's a really interesting perspective. So do you think that that trend then is where we go next?
Yeah. I mean, well, yes, I mean, this is a little bit self-serving in the sense that we've sort of focused our efforts a little bit more towards trying to keep people in context. And we've generally probably skewed a little bit more towards account executives as a customer that they're in particular that are doing some, you know, that, you know, spend, you know, maybe a quarter to half their time prospecting. And so we in particular haven't invested in like the, you know, the howitzer approach where we're a little bit more targeted. But I think, yeah, eventually, you know, I mean, you just look at all the defense mechanisms that have gone up. So, you know, before COVID, I mean, I remember, you know, when I first started in sales, this was so long ago, you know, I had a pager and and we used to be taught how to work the switchboard and then get past the admin assistant and all this stuff. Sure. And then it was the old thing where it's like, you know, start calling somebody at 5:15 in the morning and keep calling them until you get their out of office changes. Then, you know, that's when they come in the office and like all these old, you know, tricks that we used to do. And now it's like you call somebody and it's like, I don't know, people call me. I generally put them through the Google Assistant. And then it's like, if they have something really interesting to say, I might pick it up. But in general, on average, what's going to happen is I'm probably going to mark them as spam. And now, like, you know, in the days of, you know, I was working the switchboard to try to get to the admin assistant, I eventually get to some executive and I say something stupid and they're like, you're an idiot and hang up. Well, it ends there. And now it doesn't end there, right? Because now the system is learning. And it's the same way with email where you send out tons and tons of bad email. and then people mark it as spam, then your deliverability goes down. And, you know, and you can then, you know, if you're sharing, if you're on the same domain, or if you're using similar tools or using similar domains, you can hurt your peers, you can hurt other people. And so I it seems to me that the defense mechanisms are going up, and there's, you know, as everything ends up being like measures and countermeasures, I think now there's an opportunity for salespeople to up their game and just be better. And then maybe we'll be able to reintroduce more volume back into the system. If the economy gets better, you know, some other things change, and then, you know, the whole cycle will repeat again.
So more of the same patterns that we've experienced over the last like two decades playing themselves out in repetition.
Somebody will figure out some like crazy AI hack, you know, that allows them to be like indistinguishable and replicate themselves 10 times. Like, somebody will figure something out. I think that'll be pretty interesting in the space.
Well, speaking of AI, I'd be really curious to get your perspective on, you know, how you think tools like generative AI, you know, ChatGPT being the most relevant and obvious example, affect kind of like the sales development space, if you will.
Yeah. We're still working it out, I think, in terms of how this is really going to be used. A few things that I've seen that I think can be helpful. I mean, some teams or some individuals spend a lot of time crafting content, and you know, whether it's like the bones of a template or, you know, full email sequences that maybe don't have a lot of personalization necessarily. And, you know, I think in many cases, there's opportunities for that to just be written better.
Yeah.
Or to be able to say, like, you know, I want to test five different ways of doing this, and I don't really want to write all the five, so I'm going to write one, and then if ChatGPT can help me write five other ones, and then maybe we'll see which one ends up performing better. Or, you know, there might be things where it's like you want to change the tone, or you want to do, like, I think, you know, sort of tweaks on the message. I think those are all great uses for it, and you know, in saving people time and doing that. I think at some level, you know, we're certainly testing some, and many others are doing this, sort of testing out pushing the bounds of personalization with those mm-hmm. tools, where you look at a LinkedIn profile, or you know, go cobble together some other information that you know about the person, you try to, you know, sort of imitate that personalization process. I think that's okay. I think that, you know, for people that are early adopters for that, I think you can get some success with it. I think, you know, that's another one of these things where eventually everybody will probably start to do it, and then, you know, it won't, then everybody will wonder, well, am I talking to, there's like, I don't know, there's this funny cartoon where it's like one person sitting here, they have write some simple email, and then ChatGPT makes it this giant email. And then the other person gets a giant email, and they're like, ChatGPT, summarize this email. You know, and it's sort of, at the end, it's just like two sentences on either end with all this, you know, kind of junk in between. So I think, you know, you'll probably have, you know, I think the buyers are going to adopt it too at some level to save themselves time. And so I don't know where the battle's going to be won or lost, but I think it's certainly a tool that people should be experimenting with. I've even seen it where, you know, in the early days before it was a little bit more popular, where you get a few reps that are just a little bit more forward thinking on technology, would even get email sequences or emails in from their enablement people, and like they didn't like them.
Yeah.
And it wasn't fully locked down. And so they would get ChatGPT to rewrite them and put them out. And so there's interesting stuff there for sure. And those models are only getting better. And so, you know, I think you want to be in there experimenting with this on a regular basis, because what these models produce a year from now may be exponentially better than what they can do right now.
I think we're already seeing that, to be perfectly honest. And it's interesting, you brought up the buy side, which I haven't seen a lot of use cases for, you know, generative AI, but maybe when people start getting replenished budgets and start buying again, that could be a very interesting way of sorting through the morass, if you will, mm-hmm. of, you know, I always liken as a CMO, Scott Brinker, now of HubSpot, you know, produces kind of like the MarTech.
Yeah.
I think when he started, it was like in the hundreds, and now it's like,
right. Yeah. Right. Right. 500,000.
Yeah, now it's like 9,000 something. And there's just so many tools out there that you can look at. And I often joke to people, you know, on the buy side, no one appreciates just how impossible that makes everything. You know, like if you're a buyer and you wanted to source a category of tools and you've got, you know, literally like a category of a few hundred, what's a buyer to do to make a wise buying decision, right? Like they could schedule interviews with every or demos with every vendor and be done sometime in the next like 3 years.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's much more likely that you'll ask your AI agent or expert system to say like, hey, here's my problem. Like, can you go suggest five companies I should go look at? And then that's where it, and the, you know, and from a marketer's perspective, you know, it seems like that's where the game is moving, where, you know, we spent so many, you know, so long trying to get good Google rankings and backlinks and make sure our contents on our website is great and all this stuff. And in this new world, I don't like, it'd be interesting to see kind of how that changes, but I think, yeah, you're going to go ask some tool to say like, there's too much information. I need you to give me the first pass.
Yeah. Well, not to get off on a rant and of, you know, kind of like tenuous correlation to sales development, but one of the things that we've already seen here at Science and definitely with our inbound is a real increase in the number of what would otherwise be misattributed leads. So, you know, when Google or HubSpot or whatever, you know, inbound system you're using to track and attribute source, you know, leads are coming through the front door, when it doesn't know or it can't tell, it'll just lump everything into direct.
Yeah.
And, you know, guess what? Every ChatGPT recommendation of your company is by default. Mm-hmm. It's always direct, you know, because there's no like causal link that, you know, that they'll provide. Maybe that'll be a future scenario, but it definitely doesn't exist today. We know this to be true because we ask people, how did you hear about Science on all the forms that they fill out? And we see, you know, a very steady increase of people identifying, you know, things like podcasts, things like ChatGPT, things like, you know, groups on say Slack or Teams or whatever that can't be tracked otherwise, telling us, oh yeah, that's where I heard about you guys.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think some of those, you know, gut check types of attribution is great. I mean, it's almost like we've almost passed, I hate to say it, but it almost seems like we've passed through the golden age of marketing measurement where, yes. You know, it's like 5 years ago, you know, you had all the Facebook data, you had, you know, even had a little bit more Google data. And like, you could be, you know, we were like, oh, well, last touch and first touch tells me something slightly differently. And it's just like, you know, yeah. And that, you know, that unknown direct bucket now, I think is just going to get bigger and bigger and bigger. And we're almost back to the, you know, I know half my marketing budget is wasted. I don't know which half. It feels like we're maybe heading back in that direction, at least for a period.
Well, that's true. Because as you know, just to finish this thought, as generative AI takes market share from traditional search, I think, you know, there's going to be a category, if not many categories, of where you use the words AI agent before, but where we start to lean in and say, hey, ChatGPT, tell me XYZ or summarize XYZ or give me information on this. I know Google is hoping that we start to do that more with Bard, but ultimately, you know, that isn't neat and it isn't clean and it isn't directly attributable down to the digital, you know, footprint of everyone that again comes to your public website.
Yeah. Yeah. I have no idea how that gets solved. Maybe somebody will figure out a way to leave a little, you know, digital, watermark or something. And that somehow gets picked up as an artifact in these algorithms that when it comes back your way, you'll be able to figure it out. But I have no, yeah, it's going to be pretty interesting.
Well, and that's all at the same time that, you know, privacy concerns are not waning. They're increasing in virtually all countries. So I think that it does become, you know, kind of a back to the future for us of an age range where we knew exactly that phrase that you just said. Half of my ad budget is wasted. I just don't know which half.
That's right.
And I wish I did. I guess this is also a case for inbound SDRs to really focus and solve for as part of their own qualification runs or engagement runs on that first touch right after, say, the form fill, where we can have people actually starting to tell us, you know, okay, here's my experience, history, background, and why I was interested in your company in the first place.
Yeah, exactly right. And closing that, and then in turn, closing that loop with marketing, which I think happens, you know, you sometimes see SDRs in marketing, sometimes you see them in sales. I think the loop generally gets closed more frequently when the SDRs report up through the marketing organization, but regardless who you pour it up to, I think, yeah, that insight that's coming from that group is going to be more and more important because the, you know, some of these traditional quantitative methods we've relied on, I think will not be as good.
So tell me, when you think about, you know, kind of a perspective from a tools vendor, if you will, on the market, and you're kind of like plotting a course for, you know, again, where things are going, where they are today, where they've been. Give me the way that you like to deconstruct and kind of capitalize on those trends. I think you shared a little bit before when talking about personalization and, you know, that being part of feature functionality that you want to deliver. But I'd love to get your perspective, your very informed perspective on just how you think through kind of like the market and adoption of tools like Yesware.
Yeah. I don't think people are going to want to use 100 tools and have them all kind of stitched together. And I felt this, you know, years ago when I was a buyer of this tech, and I don't think any of that's really changed. And, you know, if you look at some of the people that have, you know, raised a lot of money in the space, or even you look at Salesforce, they, you know, they continue to expand the set of things that their tool does. And so the point of view that we had at Yesware was that, you know, we would not try to replicate any of the tools that get provided by a company to everybody. So, you know, like email and phone and, you know, Zoom or whatever, like we would never try to go into that space. But we saw the future as being, you know, you could run your sales process on Yesware, and that is all you would need to do is have Yesware to run your sales process. And, you know, we'd be a little bit more focused on a particular set of markets. And that's one of the things that made the Vendasta acquisition interesting to us is they've got a series of customers. They've got a CRM that they've been developing. We were able to accelerate their roadmap a little bit there. And we were already kind of thinking about a similar type of thing where you get, you know, a single stack where you can kind of run your, in Vendasta, it's even a broader stack because it extends very heavily into MarTech for people that are selling a small local business and even in, down into execution and billing. But I think it's a little bit more of like, you know, you're going to probably choose the vendor or the bundle that you think works best for your business. And I don't think you'll end up, I don't think we're going to see as much of the, I got to buy 50 things to make my text. You know, we used to always have those old, you know, like the sales stack. And as you pointed out earlier, it's like there were 100, you know, 50 things and all these different, I think now it's going to be, oh, well, I'm going to pick Zoom Info, or I'm going to pick Salesforce, or I'm going to pick Outreach or Yesware. I think it'll be more of a choice like that versus saying, I'm going to have Gong for this. I'm going to have, you know, HubSpot for that. And I'm going to have, you know, these other 10, you know, tools in the mix.
Yeah. I think that again, that's that pendulum swing, right? Like between best of breed point solutions versus platform vendors. Mm-hmm. And we're forever kind of like shifting on the pendulum cycle, aren't we?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So what do you think are going to be the crucial areas as you see it for kind of like elevating sales? We touched earlier on sales specialization and maybe haven't gone too far there. But what are some of the trends that you think are unavoidable for us going forward that we should be paying attention to, especially in the sales suite going forward?
Yeah, my general view is that buyers are going to generally show up in your funnel more informed than they did before. And the easiest way to sell to them is when they somehow show up in your funnel. That's not to say there aren't many other ways to go do it, but I think the early stage development jobs become a little bit more maybe nurture focused than they are strictly cold focused. And the cardinal rule becomes, under no circumstances can we have an unforced error have us lose one of these very, very precious leads that are very difficult to get. And so when this thing shows up in your funnel, like, what are all the things that you're going to do to make sure that that you convert that into a closed one opportunity? And it's like, it's making, and it's all the same. It's the same set of things we've always done about making sure that the follow-up is appropriate and it's well done and that you ask good questions and you're well-prepared and you're making sure that you're talking to the right number of people and talking to them in the right sequence and giving them the assets that they need and helping them, like all that stuff is still the same set of things. But I think we're going to end up starting that journey a little bit later than maybe where we have traditionally, just due to the nature of the market. And that doesn't mean that those roles aren't needed or wanted, but the where they'll be pointed, I think, will be a slightly, it will be a little bit different. And I think the bar for someone having an in-person conversation or even an in-person meeting will continue to go up. Mm. And you're going to have to really know your shit. And if I'm going to spend my time talking to you, like, it better be better than me talking to ChatGPT to try to get the answers, you know?
Right. Yeah. I think that that's a great call out for an unavoidable trend. And, you know, again, my marketing mind, tell me if you agree with this summarization of what you just said. In a sense, like, marketing leads and sales follows, because if somebody's already in your funnel, if they're already on your website, if they're already paying attention to you, what do you do? Because you technically already have costs or an investment in that individual company, you know, making them aware of your brand.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I think there's the awareness factor is huge. And then, you know, just making sure you're capitalizing, you know, sort of meeting the moment when the person shows up and whatever signals they're showing, you're sort of matching that with the appropriate level of sales interaction, I think is going to be, I mean, that's always been important, but I think even more so. I think, you know, like we talked about earlier, there was a period where you could almost muscle your way into success through, you know, sheer determination and volume and, you know, and some decent tactics. I think that's, money, certainly. And that is a harder tactic to execute, either from someone writing a check or just to, even if they do, to get to actually get it to work.
Well, you know, it's funny, like, the growth at all costs mentality, and by all costs, like, with a heavy emphasis on that word cost, seems to have really ebbed, you know, as the tide has gone out. And again, led by fewer checks being written, fewer venture capital capitalists, you know, really kind of highlighting and dominating the scene with mega rounds. Everyone seems to, again, have like the Elon Musk pose when he inherited Twitter and paid a pretty penny to do so. You know, it's like cut to the bone, mm-hmm. figure out how to do more with less, and figure it out.
Yeah, it switched 180 degrees for sure. I mean, it used to be that if you were going to have a layoff, and I've been on both sides of them, you know, many, many times, it's like, you generally didn't want to talk about it. And now it's almost like, you know, for many investors, like, layoffs are just good news. You know, there's almost no downside to it. And I can't remember a period of time when it was sort of looked at that way, even in, you know, you think back to like 08, 09 during the Great Recession, and layoffs and things, we were like, yeah, I mean, I guess like you had no choice but to sort of do it. It wasn't so much about like, oh, get fit. It, like, now it's like, oh, you know, get fit. Like, you're ready to go. Like, you cut all the fat and you're ready to kind of go attack. To me, it feels like a little bit of a different dynamic.
It's a way different dynamic. I remember, you know, still being relatively young in my career, the first .com or, you know, tech recession right after 9/11, the NASDAQ crash, if you will, mm-hmm. you know, one of the biggest sites on the web, at least in the startup space, was fcompany.com.
Yeah, right, right.
You know, like the most kind of, I guess, dark humor type of portrayal of the tech space ever. It's definitely, it wasn't normalized in the same way, you know, kind of like over the last few months, if not year, than that time. Interesting juxtaposition.
Yeah. Now we have Blind, you know, which is like a sort of a similar, almost like crowdsourced type of thing. So yeah, it does seem like these things sort of show up in moments where, you know, the environment is going through a lot of disruption.
Wow. We touched on a lot of different angles, a lot of different, kind of dynamics in this industry. For any of our listeners that are looking to connect with you personally or continue the conversation that perhaps we started here today, where should they go?
You can find me on LinkedIn. It's probably the easiest place. And if you want to, learn anything more about Yesware, we've been writing sales content for 10 years and it's all free, yesware.com/blog. You can always start a free trial at Yesware, yesware.com. And if you want to learn more about sales topics in particular, it's a little bit more, kind of strategy and management focused. I have a podcast called The Hard Sell, which you can find on the, whatever platforms and yesware.com/podcast.
Well, Joel, this has been a great interview. Thank you for spending some time with us today.
Yeah, it's good. It's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
You bet.